It's half past eight.
It's half past eight, New York time. Time to wake up America and stump the experts. Each week at this time, Lucky Strike invites you to its nationwide party. Here's how it goes. You furnish the questions, and our experts try to answer them. For every question used, Lucky Strike will reward you with $10 in defense stamps. If the question is muffed, you get a total of a $50 defense bond, plus a 24-volume set of the Encyclopedia Britannica. Send your questions to Information, Please, 480 Lexington Avenue, New York City. If our editorial staff edits your questions a bit, don't fret over it. In case of similarity, we'll have to be sole judge of who shall be paid, and all questions become the property of Information, Please. And now light up a lucky strike as I present our master of ceremonies, book reviewer of the New Yorker magazine, Clifton Fadiman. Mr. Fadiman.
Ladies and gentlemen, Information, Please carries on, as always, in its unrehearsed and unpremeditated way. Tonight, John Kieran and Franklin P. Adams are here, and as our special guests, Christopher Morley, critic, actor, and author of Kitty Foyle and other bestsellers, and that charming star of stage and screen, most recently seen in Philadelphia Story, and
H.M. Fulham.
The Philadelphia Story. And H.M. Fulham. H.M. Fulham what, Mr. Adams?
Esquire.
Thank you. Miss Ruth Hussey. And may I take a moment out for a correction, all those who are listening. Last week on this program, we announced quite blandly that Buzzard's Bay separates Martha's Vineyard from the mainland. Now, this is nonsense, and we got many letters saying so. I quote from a letter from our old friend Henry Huff of the Vineyard Gazette. Mr. Huff writes, "It is certainly Vineyard Sound which separates Martha's Vineyard from the American mainland. Vineyard Sound and no other. We always regard Buzzard's Bay," goes on Mr. Huff, "as inferior and pretty much none of our business, except that it does wash the Elizabeth Islands. I think another correct reply to the question would be the Atlantic Ocean in case the European or African mainland is meant. And so we have an apology to make. It is Vineyard Sound and not Buzzard's Bay." Mr. Kieran, you remember when old Sam Johnson was asked why he had defined a word incorrectly, he replied, what?
Just ignorance.
Just
pure ignorance.
Well, that's the case here, too.
Stark ignorance,
you say. We'll begin our program with a question to which I hope I have the correct answer this evening. This comes from Mrs. Augusta White of Buffalo. I'm going to read several lines of poetry. In each one, the pronoun she is used. Just tell me which she is meant in each of these lines of poetry. Here's the first. "She tore the azure robe of night and set the stars of glory there." I have three hands. Mr. Adams?
Freedom.
Freedom, yes. What are they?
From her mountain height.
Good enough. And the poem is what? What are we quoting from? You've got it. I can tell.
I don't know the name of the poem, but I think it was Joseph Rodman Drake.
It was. It's called simply The American Flag by Joseph Rodman Drake. Here's another she. "And with that word, she struck me. And with that word, she struck me." I think that's a very tough line. It is not terribly memorable. Has it come to any of you, Mr. Morley? Any idea?
Well, sounds like Shakespeare.
It is Shakespeare. Now all we have to do is get the name of the play. Well, it's in Taming of the Shrew. Catherine is the she mentioned, and her lute teacher, Hortensio, says, "And with that word she struck me," referring to a very bad temper. Does that come back to you now, Mr. Kieran?
Yes, sir.
It does. Well, a little too late. Here's another she. This is a very simple one. "She's my sweetheart." Who is the she? "She's my sweetheart." Mr. Kieran.
"She's my sweetheart. I'm her Joe."
I'm her beau.
Well, beau then.
Yes. That's right. And who is the she? What's her name?
Oh, Little Annie Rooney.
That's it.
Yes. "She's my Annie. I'm her Joe." Little Annie Rooney. Thank you, Mr. Adams and Mr. Kieran. "And I know she thinks of me." Who is the she in "And I know she thinks of me"? Mr. Morley.
It's in Kipling's The Road to Mandalay. There's a Burma girl, a Seton, and I owe she
that's the
me.
One. Yes, Mr.
Supiola.
Is that her name?
Say, just the same as Thebaud's
queen.
Very good. You think they had rehearsed this?
Who was Thebaud, John?
Who is Thebaud?
He was one of the Rajahs out there.
It has nothing to do with Thebes, has it?
I always thought it was Sheba with a lisp.
Oh, I don't think the Cockney's lisp. I don't think so at all, Mr. Morley. How about this one from Miss Lillian B. Bradshaw of Columbus? Get two out of three. Now, I'm going to describe the costume that a young lady wears, first in the morning, secondly at noon, and finally at night. And I want you to tell me in plain English what she had on. within reason. In the morning, she wore the following: a sloppy joe, flats, slacks, and a beanie. I understand none of that. Can anyone tell me what the young lady is wearing, Miss Hussey?
Sloppy Joe is a sweater which comes down below the waist. Flats are flat-heeled shoes. A beanie is a little round cap upon her head. And what was the other one?
Slacks.
Well, slacks are...
Slacks are slacks.
Yes, I guess we do know what slacks are. Very good. What is a beanie, again?
A beanie is a little round cap, a little skull cap. Which
such as freshmen wear.
And why do girls wear it, Mr. Adams?
Freshmen.
Oh, is this particularly a college costume, would you say, Miss Hussey?
No,
that's
wouldn't.
That's where a beanie started, in the freshman class.
The little things with those little capsules on
yes,
the top
sir.
Of them? I remember. How about this? Now, it's after lunch, and at noon she wore the following: a redding goat, wedgies, and a pill box. I'm going to ask one of the gentlemen to help us out and refer any errors to Miss Hussey. Mr. Kieran.
Well, a redding goat is a kind of coat, and of course it comes from the French borrowing of the English riding coat. Pillboxes.
Now, wait a minute. Yes, that's perfectly true. But what is a redding goat as applied to young woman's costume?
Well, it's a costume, whatever you call it.
Oh, it's a special kind, though. A very special kind.
Well, I know what the wedgies are.
Well, what are the wedgies?
Those shoes with that odd-shaped wedge for a heel.
For a woman. For a woman. Be careful
with
your language.
Yes, but it runs up like a wedge in the back.
Yes, that's right.
Up.
Built on a kind of platform. And finally, a pillbox.
That's a hat.
Well, in a matter of speaking,
well, it's
yes.
one of those little round, funny-looking hats.
That doesn't describe any hat that might do for any number of hats, Mr. Kieran. How about giving us a more precise description, Miss Hussey?
Well, I think, as I understand, a redding goat is a coat which does not meet in front, or perhaps it does at the waistline, but it is open.
Except by appointment.
yeah, at a point.
In self-defense.
Isn't it part of a costume?
Well, and then the dress, which is very often of a different color, shows a little bit underneath, and it's rather a nice combination.
Yeah, you make it sound very attractive. And can you help Mr. Kieran out on this pillbox? He merely said it was a funny hat.
Well, a pillbox is, as he said, a little round funny hat, which is shaped like a pillbox.
Associated with Susie.
Who is Susie, Mr. Moore?
A Parisian milliner-ess.
An odd life you've had.
I think it has to be worn tilted in one side, doesn't it, Ruth?
No. Miss Hussey, where is it worn? What part of the head is it worn on?
It is usually worn forward and slightly over the forehead. It may or may not be tilted.
Yes, that's right. Get that, Mr. Morley.
But didn't Susie invent it, Ruth?
I don't know.
How about this one? Now it is nighttime, and our young lady has changed costume again. She is now wearing, it says here, a chartreuse file with paillettes, and a sequin Juliet. My Lord. A chartreuse pile with paillettes, and a sequin Juliet. Mr. Morley, you're a brave man.
Well, I can go as far as the... waist.
Okay,
a chartreuse pile would be a pale green kind of muslin with paillettes is sort of...
Wait a minute.
Sort of shiny little applique almond things.
What is that? What is that again?
Isn't that okay?
What is file?
File is a sort of a thin chiffon muslin-esque, semi-translucent, most alluring fabric.
Oh, you got me all mixed up. Miss Hussey, is that right? Is that what file is?
I hadn't thought that was what file was. It's usually a heavier fabric and ribbed, I think.
Corded. Isn't that the important thing? It's a corded, usually silk or rayon. And what color did you say chartreuse was, Mr. Morley?
Well, I said sort of absinthe green.
Well, green is... absinthe is green. Yellowish green.
Yellow chartreuse.
And what are paillettes?
I know one thing, that Papa must be in the dough.
Well, I should say paillettes are semi-metallic little ornamentations or passementary that look like slices of almonds.
only more so.
I'm quite confused now. And how about a sequin Juliet? What would that be?
I think that is Juliet is also a little beanie, which is worn in the evening. Juliet cap, they speak of, anyway.
Juliet cap, you like.
I don't know if that's what it's referring to or not.
Yes, and sequin would be what?
Sequins are also little metallic discs.
Yeah, similar to paillettes, I suppose. Well, I think that gives us a complete description of what this woman would have on from time to time. How about this one from Dorothy Sigley of Edgewood, Rhode Island? Now, here's one about characters of fiction, all of whom had a desire or ambition to sit in a particular way. Tell me who they were. Get 2 out of 3. What one had a desire to sit upon the ground? As you can gather, that's part of a quotation. No, it was a man.
Oh.
Mr. Kieran.
That was King Richard II.
Yes.
For God's sakes, let's sit upon the ground and tell sad stories of the deaths of kings.
That's perfect, Mr. Kieran. Yes, very good. Two very marvelous lines, aren't they, from Richard II. Now, what character had a desire to sit in a tub of grapes? A little on the repulsive side. To sit in a tub of grapes. Any idea? It was Grandpa Joad in Grapes of Wrath. Said, I'm going to pick me a wash tub full of grapes, and I'm going to sit in them. Remember that from the movie? And how about one who had a desire to sit in the right chair? Character who wanted to sit in the right chair. Mr. Adams, is that your hand? Nervously moving around?
I don't know. That might be from the Goldilocks and the Three Bears.
Yeah, he is. Right. One was too small, one was too large, and one was just right. Well, that gives us 2 out of 3. How about this from Arthur Miller of St. Paul, Minnesota? It's a simple musical question. We're going to have 4 songs or musical excerpts played for us by Mr. Kahn at the piano. I want you to identify the heavenly bodies suggested by each of them. All you have to know, really, is the title, I suppose. Let's have the first, Mr. Kahn. Miss Hussey?
Star,
what's the song called?
I told every little star.
Yes, that's right. Didn't expect that, Mr. Adams. Who wrote the song?
Jerome D. Kern.
Good enough, Mr. Adams. That's right. Now the second. That's perhaps a little less familiar, and it is not, I believe it is not popular, unless Tin Pan Alley has heard it recently. It's by Rimsky-Korsakov. Does that come back to you, Hymn to the Sun? Mm-hmm. Is that right? How about the third? I have several hands. Miss Hussey?
My Blue Heaven.
Think not.
No?
No. No, it's a single heavenly body that's involved in this song. Have to count that wrong. Now, Mr. Morley, what were you going to say?
I thought it was My Blue Heaven. I still think so.
And
you
Mr. Kieran?
You are gallant, sir.
You and Miss Hussey are working together and cracking up a beautiful friendship this way. Mr. Kieran?
Make it 3. That's what I thought, too.
You're just a pushover
for
Miss Hussey. It's Sitting on Top of the World. Sitting on top of the world, and of
is
course the world,
heavenly
is,
body?
Well, isn't it?
Yes,
not
it's
right
a whole
now.
Planet.
It looks like it.
Well, from the point of view of the man from Mars, it's a heavenly body. That gives us 2 wrong. Now the 4th and last.
Moon.
Miss Hesse, yes, the moon. What is Mr. Kahn playing?
Clair de Lune.
Clair de Lune, yes. That gives us only 2 out of 4, however, and sends a $50 defense bond instead of the Britannica to Mr. Miller. How about this one from Nancy Kadice, K-I-K-A-D-I-C-E, I may be mispronouncing that, of Brooklyn. I'm going to ask you to imagine yourself the managing editor of the following magazines. Not all at once. The Child Study Magazine, the Journal of the American Medical Association, and the Police Gazette. Now, if the following artists were available to do covers, which magazine would you assign to each and why? Rembrandt, Mary Cassatt, and Rubens. Miss Hussey?
Mary Cassatt for Child's Magazine.
Yes, for the Child Study Magazine.
And,
Why do you say that?
Well, I've seen pictures of her. I think she did studies of mothers and children.
Yes.
Many, many, many of them.
That's quite. Very many beautiful ones. She was an American painter who lived in Paris most
yes.
of her life. And now that leaves you with the Police Gazette on your hands, Miss Hussey. Mr. Morley?
Well, I would suggest Rubens, those magnificent nudes seen from behind.
Yes, what an enthusiasm, Mr. Morris. Yes, very beautiful and buxom ladies, Rubens.
Very Rubens.
That leaves us with the Journal of the American Medical Association, and we have only one painter left. Mr. Adams?
That would be Rembrandt with the picture of the operation.
Yes.
Lesson in Anatomy.
A Lesson in Anatomy,
lesson
as
in
Miss Hussey reminds us. Well, perhaps that was too easy for you experts. How about this? Well, now, so far, we have paid out one $50 defense bond and one set of the Encyclopedia Britannica. And now Mr. Cross, with extreme modesty, maintains that there are several million Americans who could fill his place on this program.
Well, ladies and gentlemen, I'd simply nominate any man or woman who smokes Lucky's. For no one could tell you better than a Lucky Strike smoker how much fine tobacco means in terms of mildness and better taste. Yes, in a cigarette, it's the tobacco that counts. That's why the makers of Lucky's consistently pay the price to get the finer, lighter, milder tobacco. For example, this season at auctions in Reidsville, North Carolina, the American Tobacco Company paid 38% more for the tobacco it bought for its cigarettes and other tobacco products. Yes, 38% above the average market price published by the United States Department of Agriculture. And the best tobacco we buy goes into Lucky's. So it goes at market after market all over the South. The result is, Lucky Strike means fine tobacco. Mr. Fadiman, isn't that something worth remembering and worth acting on?
Mr. Cross, you've demonstrated that one fact speaks louder than 1,000 words, and it took you only 57 seconds. And now we'll go on with a question from Mr. Jerome Cox of South Bend, Indiana. Well, this is a very simple question. Get 3 out of 4 on it. Can you quote a familiar line of poetry in which some character is described in the following ways? The first character is described as envious. Envious, a line of poetry. Mr. Morley.
The envious Casca.
Yes, the envious Casca. Who is Casca?
See what a rent he made. In Julius Caesar.
Yes, see what a rent the envious Casca made, as Mr.
Paid.
Adams reminds us.
I think it probably paid.
High
see what a rent again? The envious Casca paid.
I get it. That's very good, Mr. Adams. How about happy? Happy, a character described as happy in a line of poetry. Mr. Kieran.
Once I was happy, but now I'm forlorn.
Well, that would be...
a playing trapeze.
I'll take that. And Mr. Adams?
Who is the happy warrior?
Yes. Who is he that every man in arms would wish to be? From what poem?
The Happy Warrior by Wordsworth.
By Wordsworth. Very good, Mr. Adams. Now, how about friendly? Line of poetry in which someone is described as friendly. Mr. Morley.
The cow.
Yes, the cow. Can you go on with that
the
line?
Friendly cow, all red and white, I love with all my heart. She gives me cream with all her might. I forget whether it's Sheffield
give
or Gordon.
Give me Appleton.
Probably Breakstone.
Thank you, Mr. Morley. You weren't quite as enthusiastic there as you were in describing Rubens's painting, but how about sweet? Sweet. Character described as sweet in poetry, Mr. Adams.
Tobacco.
Thank you, Mr. Adams, but it isn't a line of poetry, is it?
Oh, yes, it is.
Where?
Sweet when the morn is gray, sweet when they've cleared away luncheon at close of day, possibly sweetest.
I'd love to hear Mr. Riggs do it. Mr. Kieran, do you have another one? That's very good.
Tell
one,
me not sweet, I am unkind, and so forth.
Yes, or be good, sweet maid, and let who will be clever would be still another.
Marie.
Equally well known. How about this one for Miss J.G. Townley of Leonia, New Jersey? We're going to play 4 compositions, and each of them should suggest to you a famous painting. We have to get 3 out of 4. Mr. Cohen, will you give us the first? I had Mr. Kieran's hand at once on that.
That would be Rosa Bonheur's Horse Market.
Yes.
Horse Fair.
Or the Horse Fair, either one. And, of course, the song that was being played.
Horses?
That's right, Crazy Over Horses. Now the second one, Mr. Conn. Should suggest a famous painting to you. Oh, that's so pretty, Mr. Conn. Miss Hussey, does that come back to you? What song is being played? Oh, it's a very famous old sentimental song, Mr.
It's about Mother, isn't it?
Yes.
And then it's Whistler's Mother.
Whistler's Mother, yes. M's for the million things you taught me and so forth. Whistler's Mother. How about the third? Now, what's being played?
That.
Mr. Carey.
That's The Blue Boy by Gainsborough.
Good work. Miss Hussey, you had it at the same time.
I really did.
I'm sure you did. What was being played, Miss Hussey?
Gershwin's
Rhapsody in Blue.
Rhapsody in Blue, yes. And Gainsborough's Blue Boy would be a very good answer. Now the fourth and last. Gee, maybe we can catch
maybe,
you on this.
Maybe Degas, On Your Toes, Ballerinas.
No, I don't think so. Is that what's being played? What's being played? Anything Goes.
Anything Goes.
Well, I don't think that would suggest Degas necessarily. What would it suggest to you, Mr. Kieran? Mr. Morley?
The Castle.
Go Gang.
Anything Goes?
Anything Go Gang.
Anything Go Gang. I think...
Anything Van Gogh.
Surrealism. Any surrealism.
Yes, maybe Salvador Dali. What did you say?
I said anything Van Gogh.
It's worse and worse. Yes, I think Mr. Adams' reply would be very apt. Any surrealist, Dali perhaps, or any other. Well, we got at least 3 out of 4 on that. How about this from Dorothy Roth of Philadelphia? Can you name for us a motion picture or a play which reaches a climax when the central character in the first place, is tempted to betray his revolutionary friends. A movie in which that was the climax. Miss Hussey?
Watch on the Rhine.
No, I don't think he is tempted to betray him, though.
Well, at any point.
You're right. He's heroic all the way through. I should think The Informer. Remember The Informer?
Yes.
Wonderful picture of some years ago, in which that was one of the central climax. How about this one? In this case, the central character faces a choice between betraying the people who believe in him and returning to the life of a hobo. What picture am I describing?
Miss
Hussey?
John Doe.
Yes, Meet John Doe. Very good. And how about this one? And here, the climax is reached when the central character has to choose between marriage with economic security, odd name for a woman, and a struggling career as a surgeon. Has to choose between marriage with economic security and a struggling career as a surgeon.
Would that be Men in White?
Men in White, Miss Hussey. Very good. You have a very good memory for plays, and the others here go to plays, too, but they just don't remember them. Here's one from Elsie J. Ettinger of Los Angeles. Can you quote four lines of poetry for us that mention four different spirits or supernatural creatures? Any one will do. Angels, gnomes, elves, kobolds. Mr. Kieran, want to start us off?
I can call spirits from the vasty deep.
Well, that gives us all the spirits at once. Mr. Adams.
Angels and ministers of grace.
Very good, yes. The angels are the ones we're referring to.
Defenders.
Supernatural, yes. Yeah. That gives us one line. How about another? Any line of poetry?
It was a terrible line in The Black Crook. I know him personally.
That's worse than you think it is, Mr. Morris.
Yeah. No, it isn't. I knew how bad it was.
Mr.
Such strains as would have won the ear of Pluto to have quite set free his half-regained Eurydice. Pluto is in there.
That's beautiful.
Isn't that all
right? Thank you very much, Mr. Kieran. Yes, Pluto. That's the name of one. Sure, Miss Hussey.
I remember a part of a line. I don't know if that will do it. Something about the gnomes and elves and the squidgy scum squeeze that
swallow themselves.
And it was from The Raggedy Man.
Is that right?
That's right.
Very good. Well, that gives us...
All about giants and griffins and elves and the squidgy come squeezed that swallows herself.
Thank you very much. That gives us a half a dozen in one line. Well, there are lots of lines with the word ghost in them, I guess. Mr. Kieran, maybe
with
a
ghost style.
With a ghost
style.
Yeah, that's the one I meant.
The goblins will get you if you don't.
The goblins will get you. Oh, Mr. Adams, I dream of Jeannie with a light brown hair. Swallow that one. Here's one for Margaret L. Brown of this city. It's about nursery rhymes. I want you to get 2 out of 3 on this. In nursery rhymes, can you tell me who refused to extend credit to a prospective customer? These are going to be very elegantly phrased. Miss Hussey?
And you haven't a penny. Who was it? The little, oh, dear.
Simple Simon.
Yeah, Simple Simon.
That was Mr. Morley saying Simple Simon to Miss Hussey.
Was the pieman, really. Miss Hussey meant.
That's right. Now, how about this? Who practiced diversification of crops? Diversification of crops. Mr. Morley?
The old woman who lived in a shoe.
Well, no, she had only one kind of crop. infants.
Yes, but they were different.
Mr. Kieran?
Well, I know someone who sold silver bells and cockle shells.
Yes. Yes, and you forgot
Mary
most
Mary,
important.
Quite contrary.
Yes, Mary Mary, and pretty maids all in a row. That would be a diversified crop. Which one had a solution to the housing problem?
Well, that was the old woman who lived in a shoe.
Yes, I can think of another even more convenient solution to the housing problem.
There was an old woman who lived under a hill, and if she's not gone, she's living there still.
Well, that's very good. That's very dogmatic about it, Miss Hussey. Yes.
You mean Peter Pumpkin Eater.
I was thinking of Peter, though Miss Hussey's answer is perfectly good. How did Peter solve the housing problem?
And a wife couldn't keep her, he put her in a pumpkin shell, and there he kept her very well.
Yes, it's a classic solution. How about this? From Mrs. Pearl E. Mayer of Woodside, Long Island. What part of your face or head is your philtrum? That's P-H-I-L-T-R-U-M. Miss Hussey, you probably never knew you had a little philtrum.
No,
any idea where it is? You have no idea at all, eh? Do you know where your philtrum is, Mr. Kieran?
I do not.
And you all have little philtrums, as a matter of fact. It's a little groove in your upper lip. You see that little thing you have in your upper lip? Very nice one in the case of Miss Hussey. That's a philtrum.
Well, that's a philtrum, isn't it?
That's a philtrum.
I can't see mine anymore.
Where is or where are your nares, N-A-R-E-S? Oh, I have several hands on that. Mr. Adams.
Those are the nostrils.
Those are the nostrils. I guess it's just Latin for nostrils.
Oh, no, it's crossword.
And finally, where is your maxilla? Mr. Kieran.
That's your jawbone.
Yes, your jawbone. It's mentioned in the Bible, though not, right. Again, who was it that slaughtered the Philistines with a maxilla?
Samson
slaughtered the Philistines with a maxilla of an ass. That's right. And I think that's about all we'll have time for. We got 3 out of 3 on that. And here's Mr. Cross, who says that if you're looking for a milder, better-tasting cigarette, the answer is in the palm of your hand.
Well, ladies and gentlemen, let me explain that often a tobacco expert examining tobacco will crumple it in the palm of his hand and then, critically, inhale the fragrance. Now, this same test of tobacco quality is one you can make yourself. Just do this. Split open a Lucky Strike cigarette. Crumple the tobacco between your palms and breathe in the fragrance. We think it will win you to Lucky's. You see, fine aroma is one of the many hallmarks of fine tobacco. And smokers, it's fine tobacco that has made Lucky's the overwhelming preference of independent tobacco experts. At market after market, they see us pay the price to get the milder, better-tasting leaf. For example, at auctions in Conway, South Carolina this season, the American Tobacco Company paid 34% more than the average market price published by the United States Department of Agriculture. And at Valdosta, Georgia, we paid 45% more. So it goes all over the South. And the best tobacco we buy goes into Lucky's. Yes, Lucky Strike means fine tobacco. And this is something you can prove to yourself by making this simple test of the quality of Lucky Strike right in the palm of your own hand.
Thank you, Mr. Cross. This evening, Lucky Strike has cheerfully paid out just one $50 defense bond and one set of the Encyclopedia Britannica. Thank you, Miss Hussey, and thank you, Mr. Morley, for attending our party tonight. Now, next week, our three regulars, Oscar Levant, John Kieran, and Franklin P. Adams, will be on deck to do their stuff. But as to next week's guest, well, we had a nice one all ready to announce when he suddenly remembered, this is true, he suddenly remembered that next week is Friday the 13th. Now, it so happens that this fellow wouldn't walk under a ladder if Ruth Hussey were waiting there for him. So I'm sorry, but we'll just have to let you know during the week who the guest expert will be. Just watch the papers for the name. Now remember, for every question answered correctly, the sender gets $10 in defense stamps. And for every question that stumps our board, you get a total of a $50 defense bond. And in addition, the complete 24-volume set of the Encyclopedia Britannica. Remember to send your letters with questions and the correct answers to Information, Please, at 480 Lexington Avenue, New York City. And now a parting message from Mr. L.A. Speed Riggs, famous tobacco auctioneer from Goldsboro, North Carolina.
When you hear that chant, ladies and gentlemen, remember these two important facts, that at market after market, we pay the price to get the milder, better-tasting tobaccos, and that with independent experts, with men who know tobacco best, it's Lucky's 2-to-1. Yes, in a cigarette, it's the tobacco that counts, and Lucky Strike means fine tobacco. So smoke the smoke tobacco experts smoke. Lucky Strike.
This program came to you from New York.